You're listening to Quest to the Core, a podcast about leading with intention, clarity, and courage from the inside out, where the leadership journey gets personal, reflective, and powerfully real. In every episode, Jonna and Simone invite you into thoughtful dialogue that challenges assumptions, sharpens self-awareness, and equips you with actionable insights to lead with greater impact. Now, here is today's episode.
When was the last time you knew you should hand something off, but you didn't? Maybe you told yourself it would be faster if you did it yourself, or safer. Could be that the timing wasn't right. Delegation is one of the most talked about leadership skills and one of the least practiced.
This is Quest to the Core, where we explore the mindsets and practices that shape how we lead, learn, and live. I'm Simone.
And I'm Jonna. Today, we're unpacking delegation, not as a productivity tactic, but as a mirror. Delegation reveals our narratives about trust, identity, fairness, and even our fears.
We will explore three layers today. The first one is why delegation feels so hard, because let's be honest, it does sometimes. And then the second layer is how gender and also who we are shapes the experience of delegation on both sides of it. And then also how to shift from control to capacity as a leader, and delegation plays a big part of that.
And we recognize delegation isn't simple, but it is essential and very revealing about ourselves. So let's start with what makes it so hard in the first place.
To do that, to answer that question of what makes it so hard in the first place, is we really need to look at psychology and the neuroscience of control. Delegation triggers the amygdala, the brain's threat center. Handing control over to others sometimes can feel like handing over our own safety or our own survival. And let's face it, the brain really does love predictability. And when we delegate, our brain experiences the uncertainty that comes up with delegation is danger.
And when we experience danger or something that's a threat, we want to have more control over, because we want to ensure that the outcome is going to be in our best interest, right? And for our survival, that we are whole on the other side. And again, as a reminder, our brain doesn't necessarily distinguish a physical threat from a psychological threat, but our brain reacts the same way.
Yeah. And back when there were dinosaurs, this worked great, because we would see a threat and our brain saw it before our bodies actually saw it. But because there's no longer dinosaurs that we have to run away from, our brain doesn't distinguish a dinosaur from a threat that we perceive around us. And so a lot of threats can pop up with delegation. You know, we really get nervous about, you know, is the other person going to do it the way we want it done or the way that we need it done? And in preparation for this episode, that article of Are You an Accidental Dictator? Number one, the title of that article, brilliant, because I saw it, I stopped. It's like, this is great. Number one, who came up with that article?
It's a title. Powerful question.
Very powerful question. And I think it gave me a little bit of a relief that, okay, it can be accidental. That you become a micromanager. I may be micromanaging from an accidental perspective. And the article really goes on to talk about, you know, high potential leaders tend to turn out to be micromanagers, or they don't delegate as much. And it's not really because they don't trust other people, but because they overtrust themselves. They know that they can do it and it's just easier. Let me just go and do this. So they create this, you know, dependency unconsciously. They create this dependency where they think that since I'm in control, I'm competent. And so they don't give some of that control away, which is what they feel like they're having to do with delegation. But, you know, for our listeners out there, it's not that you're just awful at delegation, but there is a brain mechanism that is having you pause and making you anxious about it.
I want to go back to the statement that you made about it's not the fact that we don't trust other people, but it's because we may overtrust ourselves. Mm-hmm. I just want to sit on that for just a minute and bring up the fact, right? The more awareness that we have about our internal dialogues, our internal narratives and how we approach things really can help us determine, is it that I overtrust myself more so than I don't trust other people? Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge piece of taking that subconscious accidental mm-hmm. dictator and bringing it to light and being able to actually manage through that and work through developing the capacity to delegate.
When you're thinking about trusting other people, I think delegation requires you to examine your assumptions about your trust of others. And so that's this dance of, oh, I just, you know, because we say automatically, I can do it better. It's faster for me to do it. Is that really true? Or is that statement driven by a bias, an unconscious bias personally, that I just may not trust them to get it done? And I think there's a lot from the brain's perspective that just happens automatically in this whole space of delegation. That I think it's worth, you know, a lot of leaders to examine for themselves. You know, one of the premises of our podcast is the unexamined leader is not worth following. With delegation, you really want to look at, what are my internal biases? What's stopping me? What's making it hard for me to delegate? Not just, why is it hard for people to delegate? Why is it hard for me to delegate? So I think looking at, what are my unconscious biases? Where do I overtrust myself? I think these are places to start for our listeners.
Absolutely. And I think the idea of control is helping us regulate whatever emotions show up in that, whether it's we don't trust people or mm-hmm. we are trying to protect our identity, because a lot of times we attach our identity to our success in our work or whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish, that we know that outcome is, or at least we perceive that that outcome is going to have an impact on how people perceive who we are. And so that control allows us to feel like we are protecting our identity on the other end. Mm-hmm. But control doesn't scale. Control doesn't allow us to expand. Control doesn't allow us to grow. It's that trust factor that does.
And when you think about scaling as a leader, that's where your promotions happen. If you want to be promoted, you've really got to figure out this, how do you scale yourself? And delegation is a part of that. And so if you're approaching it from, I've got to control things, that's where your roadblock's going to show up for you in getting promoted, or getting promoted to a level but not getting promoted beyond that. It might be inside of here, and this may be a good place for people to stop and look.
So what I'm hearing you say is the very thing that builds leadership capacity, giving power mm-hmm. away, feels like danger, danger, danger to the brain.
It is. what that show was, the robot, Danger Roll Robinson, Danger yeah. Roll Robinson. And that's what's going on, I think, you know, that we don't want to give it up, because I think because it could hurt our brand, our reputation. And that is, it's a hard thing to do.
I know we talked about emotional agility in a previous episode, but delegation really becomes an exercise of emotional agility. Mm-hmm.
It really does. And one of the key factors with emotional agility was that pause, that space. You know, you experience the emotion and then you don't act on it just yet. If it's about that, keeping your controlling yourself or displaying that self-control in uncertain times, then really what is underneath that? Like, what's underneath that has us not delegate?
Delegation is not a natural leadership act. We don't just naturally delegate to others. And research has shown that there is a difference between genders, and shows that men and women experience delegation differently. And it could be due to social norms, emotional expectations. But I think for us, that extends even further, right? Not just showing the difference in the gender, but who we are is going to determine how we experience delegation or how we approach and even receive delegation.
So what the research actually shows is that women often perceive delegation as being assertive or to take charge. And so that can be a risky proposition, particularly from a very young age. We train our kids in play nice, be fair. And that is overlaid to younger girls more often than it is to younger boys and some of the traditional types of games. So a lot of girls are socialized to play with dolls or to play house, and boys are socialized to play sports or rough and tumble games. And there's no goal line in dolls, but there is in some of the sports games. Now, a lot of that's changed because there is more organized sports for younger girls, but from those earlier developmental stages, it's not. So boys are taught from a young age a lot quicker how to fail fast, how to take orders and implement them, duke it out on the field, and then when you come off the field, everything's fine. And the socialization isn't quite there yet for young girls. And so you bring that up into school and into the world of work. So some of those behaviors may be in conflict with each other. Now, I'm saying girls and boys and men and women, that's a very, I hate even using those because it anchors it, because it really can be even as simple as, you know, children, men or boys or girls who were socialized in team sports could be socialized in how to fail, lose, win, lose fast, and then duke it out on the field and then go. They may have better skills around delegating, the boys and girls who were not socialized around those types. Now, there's no research in terms of the team sports, but there's something there that it's just different. So it shows up different for boys, for girls, for men, for women.
Well, and I think it's fascinating. And I'm sure if we dug a little bit deeper, there's probably something out there when it comes to the sports and teams. And I think with an organized sport, you typically have some kind of role or place within, and then you start learning the language of delegation and from both sides, like how to delegate and how to receive, simply based on your role in that organized structure of the sport.
Yes. So how that plays out in the world of work, when you go to delegate to someone, sometimes they're softening language. Well, if you have time, could you maybe get to this? Well, if as a leader, if you really need it by 5 o'clock today, you need to be straight and say that. Now, if you've got, you know, a person who needs more of that social interaction, if you go up to them straight and say, hey, get this to me by five, they may bristle like, oh, my God, they're mad at me. Why? And so then there's a lot of anxiety around it. I think that it could be anxiety producing for both sides. And I think it comes back to knowing who you are. Why might you not delegate? Knowing who the others are that you are delegating to as well, because it's, you know, it's important to help with the emotional aspect of it, not just the task aspect of getting something done by others.
Which I think all of the trainings, classes, books on delegation have done a great job in trying to allow people to shift into a mindset of using delegation more as, you know, a development opportunity, that kind of thing. Because the research has shown, whether it's women or someone who has a characteristic of, I don't want to impose on someone else, right? Or it's not that I want, you know, I don't want to give you this because I know you have a lot on your plate. And we feel, and this is for me too, sometimes of like, you know, that emotional tension of, I know you're busy, I know you're swamped. And I definitely don't want to be the person to add something else on your plate, which is huge.
And that is, earlier we talked about overtrusting myself. That's why I might not delegate. In this instance, someone may not delegate because they don't want to impose. So there's another reason why. Like, why might I not delegate? And so it's a really starts with examining yourself.
It does. And really to know, right? I think obviously our norms, you know, based on how we were raised, how we grew up, what we experienced as an individual in our formative years really shapes how we approach situations and how we approach delegation and how do we embark upon this social risk of handing over a task that ultimately we could be the one held responsible for.
You know, that brings up something else that I don't know if this is true, but it'd be a pretty cool study to do. So if there's any PhD students out there looking for something to examine or research, here's a potential idea. Taking a look at in the work setting, what were the first 24 months like for a new hire who is an early career new hire, not, you know, a new hire who's been seasoned trails, but this is their first professional job. What was their first 24 months like? Was it a high training environment where they were being developed in how to work in the world? Or were they just being trained on how to do the job that they were hired into? So were they in a leadership development program where they rotated through the organization for the first 6 months or 12 months or 18 months where it was high feedback on how they were doing, how they were interacting, and they had mentors? Or did they come in and learn how to do this specific job? It may have been a great training program on how to do that specific job. And looking at them both 5 years later on what their skills are with delegation, what their emotional reaction to delegation is on both sides, I think there'd be a connection.
Absolutely. I definitely have a strong hypothesis on this one.
And what might your hypothesis be?
Well, obviously, I feel like if we give humans the development for capacity, as opposed to very narrow focus, you're going to see a drastic difference in their ability to encounter different types of situations and be able to develop at a faster rate. I even think about parenting. If we allow or create the environment for building that capacity, then you're going to set your child up for success for whatever they encounter, as opposed to just giving them the training, the tools, the skills for that particular situation. Mm-hmm. It is going to be much more difficult when they encounter a situation that's slightly different or outside of that trained guardrails. Mm-hmm. It's going to take them a little bit longer to figure that out if we don't give them that kind of development and capacity. I don't know if that made sense.
It does. And I just wonder how to create that as a study. Because it would be great to overlay what was it like for you with your parents as a kid? Like, how do you create that questionnaire? I don't know.
I think it would be a lot obviously more difficult, and especially when you come to research children, and you know, there's a lot of scrutiny, and which rightfully so there should be, but it will be much more difficult because you're also asking people to reflect upon many years ago.
Many years ago, yes. Yeah. So the age of the sample would need to be pretty targeted. But I think that if you're training people how to work in this environment, how to be curious about this environment and actually have that be, you're giving them feedback on that. And it's, you know, what questions do you have? Okay. Actually stopping and saying, here's my feedback on the questions you were asking. And here is my feedback on how you applied that learning. And you're going to this other area next. And then actually handing, I think that the whole delegation piece, because through that cycle, they're learning to receiving things, dealing with it, and then giving it back. There's no emotional, other than the heightened stress of, am I going to get it right? Versus, why are they giving this to me? And so I think that there could be some applicability to some learning systems on helping to teach delegation early through the focusing on the early entry roles, early career roles.
Well, and I think taking a step back, right, because we've talked about how delegation feels like, you know, danger, feels like a risk. Mm-hmm. And if we equip people with the ability to navigate emotionally and socially through what is perceived as a risk, then we're going to help them shift from, I have to be in control, to, okay, now I feel confident in delegating something over to someone else.
Yeah. So what you're saying really is that delegation isn't just a handoff, like, here, do this, there's firewall, let me hand you this thing and go do it and then bring it back to me. There really is more of this zone of a relationship. You're transferring learning to someone, ownership of it to someone, and in a very big sense, you're actually transferring trust. Just the act of delegating, you are saying, hey, I trust you, without saying those words, I trust you.
And remember, emotions are contagious. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, I'm delegating this to you, but I'm not really sure I trust you, right? Mm-hmm. If we have that behavior or those emotions behind it, and we don't address that, that's going to show up in maybe we're delegating, but we're micromanaging as we're delegating, or we delegate with the hope that they're going to do well, and kind of thinking, well, they're not going to do it right anyway. So I'm going to kind of go behind the scenes and make sure I have my ducks in a row before they give me back whatever it is they're supposed to, right? So understanding who we are, how we show up, and what our space is when we hand something over is going to make a huge difference in giving up that quote-unquote control and creating that capacity for someone else.
Well, let's talk about what effective delegation looks like. The research really makes it clear on what effective delegation looks like. And there's three components that need to be present in order for it to really be effective. The first one is clarity. And when you're delegating to someone else, you're saying, here's what success looks like. So that's the clarity part of it. You're telling the other person, here's what it looks like on the other end. The second one is the autonomy. And you want to be sure to articulate what level and how much autonomy they may have. And so here's how you can shape it. You may be giving them the autonomy to make all the decisions in it. You may be giving them the autonomy to pull the things together, make a recommendation on the decision and come to you for it, whatever that is. But you need to declare what level of autonomy that they have so they know how they can shape it. So the first, clarity. Second, autonomy. The third one is support. You need to articulate, here's how I'm going to support you along the way. I'll either be right beside you, or if it's something that someone has done repeatedly, they're really good at it, they don't need you there, you can say, you've got this, let's do a check-in in 2 weeks, or let's do, like, you set those marks for them then to come back to you. So you've really got to identify what level of support, what, how often it will be. Now, you don't want to, you've got a brand new person, it's the first time they're doing something. You don't want to say, hey, I trust you. You've got this. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Tell me how it's going. Absolutely.
Go figure it out.
That is not what you need to do. So you need to shape how you're going to support them through it. And even say, this is the first time that you've done this. Why don't you do these first couple of things? Come back and talk with me and share with me what you're thinking. I'm going to be interested in your thought process along this. I'm going to be interested in how you're making decisions with this. And I'm here to help you shape those decisions. And so you really want to articulate how you're going to support them along the way.
Well, and I hope through this episode, and I know in many of our past episodes, we've talked about, as a leader, we have to create the environment for this to occur. So I hope that people have heard it through as we were talking with the previous points, but I think this one is so important because in order to have the clarity and the, give people the autonomy and create that support, there must be the environment for this to happen. Mm-hmm. Because if not, then it will be a dictatorship or a good luck, go have fun, jump out of an airplane without a parachute kind of thing, because that environment is so important.
Well, and this is where your own assumptions on trust, responsibility, fairness really come into play and how you actually, so how you delegate and who you're delegating to is an unspoken banner on how you, what your assumptions are for the environment. So if you're always delegating to the same person, and that's not really delegation. You just have your secondhand person doing everything. If you are, you know, deliberately choosing who to give something to based on their experience, based on what they need to learn, based on their capacity and others' capacities on the team, that sounds a little bit more fair inside of there. Fairness is a component of creating that environment for delegation. So don't, listeners, you can't fool yourself into thinking, oh, I'm good at delegating because you do have one other person on the team taking care of a lot of stuff. It's not really delegation.
Well, and I can't remember if we read in an article or if it was something that we had talked about, but if we redefine delegation in our mind as opposed to transferring tasks into the transfer of trust. Wow, what a shift that can make, right?
Yes, that's a huge shift. Transfer of trust, and we can even add to that, I'm transferring learning, not just the trust part. Like, I'm giving you this trust, but I also want you to learn. Yeah, it's an act of developing other people. And main responsibility of a manager, of a leader, someone who's managing people, is to get the work done and to develop your people. So delegation can really help you get both of those things done. But the environment's critical. You've got to set that environment up.
Well, and I think it's seen from the outside looking in as well. I know you have worked with many individuals and many organizations, and you made the comment in our planning discussion for this topic about the maturity level of an organization and how you can see just simply based on how is delegation perceived and done inside of the organization.
Exactly. You know, when I go in to work with either a team, if I'm working inside of an organization, working with a team, or if I'm outside of an organization coming in doing some consulting work, I'm always doing a scan of what's the maturity of the organization, because they want to get to a place. They've got a problem. We are not hitting sales targets. We are not being as efficient. Our price structure is too high. Whatever the problem is, so I'll scan the organization of what's that leadership maturity. And one of the factors I'm looking at is what's their maturity in delegation? What's the culture of it? With a low maturity organization, what I see is that delegation may be happening in that some people may be getting stuff done, but they're going to their go-tos. And when mistakes happen, they tend to be hidden. Those go hand in hand.
I think you need to repeat that, because I think that is a powerful statement that people need to hear.
When delegation is not effective, you have a lower effective level of delegation in a team. One of the things I tend to see is that mistakes are hidden. They're not talked about. They try to fix them really quickly before anybody knows about them. And it's not some grand cover-up scheme. It's just the culture of, okay, when you make a mistake, you fix it and you take care of it. A high maturity culture, on the other hand, that's when delegation is seen as a development tool. And they look across the organization who needs to develop this skill. And let's look at, do they have enough of other skills that they'll be successful in this while they're learning the new skill? Now, if it's an emergency and something has to be done in 2 days, that may not be the time that they're giving a developmental task to delegating something from a development perspective. But in that environment, one of the things I see with, you know, the low maturity environment, mistakes are hidden, but in the higher maturity, mistakes are seen as data that does a couple of things. Number one, it allows the person who made the mistake to learn from it, to dig into it, to be coached around it. But if it's not a person that made the mistake, it allows the system to identify how to correct itself. So the delegation and how we handle mistakes, it goes hand in hand with how mature an organization is, and really, said a different way, it's how mature the organizational leadership is in that organization. We tend to look at it as just a skill to coach somebody on. Hey, they should be better at delegation, you know, rather than it can really be a strategic lever for an organization to create a culture of delegation. And there's a real art to it. There's not necessarily one prescription. You've got to look at what's your environment. And how can we help create this where it's safe to delegate, safe to make mistakes?
I think if people hear one thing from this episode, is that delegation is not easy. It's not simple. Mm-hmm. It is not just handing off a task. There should be intention, which we both love that word. Mm-hmm. There should be great intentionality behind understanding how you show up when it comes to delegation, so that you can create the environment, you can get to know your people, you can understand what is not just the right task and the right person, but who is the best person and the best task to delegate, and start to create that culture so delegation becomes a learning system inside of your team.
And I like to ask people to, like, give the opportunity for people to step up to something that in a large multinational company, you had a project that needed to happen in Japan, and needed someone from my team to go do that. And so I looked at my director, said who are the possible people, and they listed a couple and wanted to just appoint somebody. And I said, why don't we allow people to apply for it? We sent out an email to all of the people who would fit in the qualifications to be able to do it and said, here's this opportunity. And we wrote out what the scope was. Here's the amount of time. Here's what it's going to take. So we described all the parameters and said, if you're interested, reply back as to why you would be the best one to do it, what you need to learn and how this would help you learn that, and how your current workload should best be managed. And so we got these great responses from people. And it helped us to pick one that we didn't think necessarily would be interested or could do it because there were some family things going on. But it was perfect because she was able to clearly list out how all of that would just be taken care of, and it worked. And it was great because then she had this plan for how the people who were on her team would then be backfilling these things and what they needed to learn and the things that they were already good at to make sure nothing fell through the cracks. So it was a delegation, but they put themselves up for the delegation. And just the results were just pretty powerful. And the engagement that we got from everyone who applied to do it was the energy lift we got from it was pretty powerful.
I appreciate you sharing that story. I think that probably shifted some people's thinking on delegation because we naturally think of delegation of me handing something to you as opposed to saying, hey, there's something out here. Mm-hmm. Who would be interested in it? And I also think that it speaks to the fact that the better leaders are at having those developmental conversations, those performance conversations, the more that they have focus in on individualized development plans for people to understand the skills that people want to develop and help them get to where they want to go, the easier, not the delegation's easy, but the easier it can become to be able to select the right person or the best person.
We'll tend to go to the people that we trust. And so here we were opening it up. What was that?
The people we know that's going to get it done and get it done right. And it's not a developmental opportunity for them at all. We just know they can do it and get it done.
And it's going to make us look good because we know that they can do it. And I understand the logic of it, but it cuts off development everywhere. So I think it slows the progression of where a company can go, what a team can do, and what's potentially possible. I know that we spent a lot of time talking about how delegation really is developing other people. I don't want us to lose sight of the fact that delegation doesn't really start with other people. It starts with us. What are those stories that we're telling ourselves? Those assumptions we have about trust, about control, we're giving up control, what our own self-worth is, how we're seen as a leader. And that's really where the core framework work begins. And so, John, why don't we spend a little time now that we're getting close to the end of our episode today on how do we connect the topic of delegation to the core framework?
Absolutely. And I love the core framework because it does overlay on just about everything. But when we look at the core framework, curiosity, openness, reflection, and embrace, it allows us to create that space for us to understand how we approach and experience delegation. So curiosity turns delegation from a risk into a learning moment. It can shift leaders from protecting my identity, protecting this threat that I'm perceiving, to expanding, to having capacity. So really asking ourselves, what story are we telling and why can't we let this go? And what might that discover about ourselves if we actually did delegate?
So we always start with curiosity. It's the anchor for self-discovery. If you don't ask yourself those questions, and those are great questions, what story am I telling myself about why I can't let this go is at the heart of why delegation is hard. So if you can begin to explore that they'll lead very nicely into openness, so that the openness part of the framework helps you to dismantle that belief that my way is the right way. And that's what has us not delegate often, is that I have the right way of doing this. So by being more open that there may be a different way or that someone else could do that, it really creates that psychological safety. That environment is so critical for healthy and effective delegation to occur. So when people feel that they're trusted or they're not being, you know, micromanaged, they may be, you may be walking beside them and helping, but if they don't feel that micromanagement type of experience, they're going to take ownership of what they're doing. And so a fundamental question for leaders here is, how can I share why I'm delegating and not to explain what to do? So that way you can help invite that trust. So really help to start sharing the why I'm delegating this to you could really help with the person's experience of it.
This one is probably the most difficult for myself because I'm always like, well, I wouldn't have done it that way.
No.
Yeah. So being open to, there are a number of different ways things can get done, mm-hmm. and really understanding and being open to that element of, okay, why am I delegating this? Is not to just get it done. There's a deeper purpose behind it.
You want to know how I learned some of that? It was from my mom. Okay, I'm one of seven children. So there's a lot of stuff that has to happen in a house with seven kids. And she was great about like getting things done inside of the house that were like housework related and cooking and cleaning. But we would help with cooking, cleaning, loading the dishwasher, or helping to fold laundry or what have you. And she didn't restack the dishwasher. She's like, well, yeah, I didn't have to do it, so it's fine. And if the clothes were a little messy when they were folded, she was like, it doesn't matter. I didn't have to fold them. It's okay. You know, and that's how we would learn as well. And so I think I really appreciate that now. I didn't then. I was like, I don't do it as good as so-and-so. She was like, it doesn't matter. It's done, right? It's okay that it's not done perfectly.
Well, your mother was a saint. That's all I can say. She was a saint.
Yeah. We're seven children.
Very
and
much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty, for sure. Pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, which leads us into reflection. And with reflection, delegation can become strategic and it can start creating an identity shift in us as leaders. Asking ourselves, where am I still jumping in and saving people instead of actually developing them is going to be a crucial answer in taking a step back and looking at a whole picture of delegation.
Well, that leads us to embrace. So delegation is not just an act of letting go, but it's leaning in to trust people, leaning in to develop people, all of the other items that we just talked about for you to examine, and really begin to integrate that into what you're doing so that you're actually enabling other people. So it's not about what task can I step in and do. What capability can I enable someone to learn inside of this function of getting the task done? So a question that our listeners can take away from this week for the embrace piece is, what is one meaningful act that I'll delegate this week? Not as a test, but really as an act of trust of another person.
And that's powerful, mm-hmm. and probably going to be difficult for some of us. Mm-hmm. But that leads us to the end, to our reflection prompt. So Simone, what do you have for us today?
Yeah. Okay, so our reflection prompt. So for our listeners and for ourselves, Jonna, I encourage all of us to take on this one thing. What is one thing on your plate right now that you can delegate to others, but you haven't? As you're thinking about that thing, what is that story that you're telling yourself about why you're holding on to it? Now, parents can do this as well, too. So the loading of the dishwasher, folding the laundry, right? Like, or making of a bed. Why are you doing it and not having somebody else do it? And then the final part of that is, what might you gain and what might your team gain or your family gain if you let that go?
But delegation isn't about letting go. It is about expanding the capacity of yourself and everyone around you. So our next episode is going to be a little bit different. We are going to take a pause. We are going to practice what we preach, and we are going to have a dialogue and reflection over this past year of us committing to this idea and going about this journey and what that has meant for us. And we will also share what's next as well.
Excellent. So don't forget to access our resources on our website, www.questtothecore.com, for find our discussion guides and other books and content related to our episodes. We have a very special thanks to Grammy-recognized hit songwriter Cliff Goldmacher for our theme song. You can reference his information on our website as well.
And until next time, notice where your instinct to hold tight can become your invitation to expand.